accession number 11202, reel 5.
Mr. J.C. Rogers, tape number 5. You've just described an incident in the whilst eating your meal, Mr. Rogers. Was there a lot of these problems on board the ship?
No, I wouldn't say that was one that stuck out in my mind. But I don't think there were a great lot of problems like that. The worst part at the beginning of the voyage was seasickness, and we used to get boat stations drill. And one particular time when I was having trouble myself and I was seasick myself, there was a boat station call, and I went up onto the boat station, and I had to, you had to fasten your mare west, and everybody had to tie their mare west on them and stand at your boat station. It was all drilled out for you. And I felt like being sick, and I went over to the side, and I come out, and one of the officers said to me, "Rogers, get back into your position." Well, I had to. That was part of the discipline. But later on, when I got all right, about a week after, I saw this same officer, and he was lying over the deck with his head, and he was turning out his stomach. Poor fella. And I said, "Well, now you know."
But the discipline was all right on the ship.
Oh yes, yeah. Well, it was boredom more than anything else. You used to have to sling your hammock at night time, but during the day, the deck had to be all nice and clean, and on the top was rafters, and everything had to be packed away, and we used to get plenty of inspection. They used to come round, the officers used to come round and have a deck inspection, and if there was anything hanging down from these rafters, there was trouble for the mess deck, so we had to keep the place tidy, you know.
What kind of duties were you given?
Was it kind of a guard duty on different points of the ship? Picket. I think you used to call it a picket, and you used to be given a position on the ship, and somebody would come round and check that you were all in position and watching out for different things, and there was one particular time we had a fire where there was somebody give a fire alarm, and I remember it was right down in the hold of the ship somewhere. My stores were down in the hold, but this was somewhere near the engine room, and it was a small fire, and we had to form ourselves into a line, and buckets of water get passed along, and we got that put right. The ship itself, as I say, was old, and it wasn't able to keep up to the rest of the convoy at times, and the steering, I think that it had a fault with the steering, and we could be in the convoy, and HMS Exeter was with us, being one of the main battles before, and it was taking us out with one of our escorts, and and we would find ourselves separated from the convoy, and HMS Exeter could make a bigger sweep and come round and kind of collect us in until we were able to catch up to the convoy again. I expect the convoy had been given instructions to slow down until we caught up to them. But as we got into the warmer weather, we used to go up on deck and swing their hammocks anywhere we could. And we passed Freetown, and it was a good experience being on top of the deck then, because it rained and there's a hot atmosphere round about Freetown, and we were all glad of it. So we all just stripped off where we stood on the deck and just let the rain come down. Put the our pants and shirts, whatever we had on, under cover, and we just stood there, and we really enjoyed that. But it didn't last very long, the rain, and we took advantage of it. But as we got further along, I was sleeping on deck on the hammock with this chap from Darlington, and during the night there was a terrible crunch, and we woke up, and when I looked out, I seen something moving away from the ship, and I thought, really, first thoughts just waking up, that we'd been torpedoed or something, and the one part of the ship was leaving it, and I was on the other part, and I just saw this in the dark, this thing moving away. And we had a scramble, and there was word went around boat stations, so we grabbed our we used our life belt for pillars, you see, so we got them. And my pal next to me, he was a bit late in getting out of his hammock. I said, "What are you looking for?" He said, "I'm looking for my sand shoes, because we used to have to have the deck shoes, the way you see, you have to use them." I said, "I don't think you'd want them where you were going, because I was sure it would be hit and the ship would in half." But when we got making towards the boat stations, it was another ship. We'd had an accident, and it probably our fault, the Arjuna itself, with it being bad steering perhaps. They'd bumped another ship, and they'd taken the derricks and one of the lifeboats away and hauled the side of the ship. But it wasn't panic stations, because it wasn't very long. We didn't even get to the boat stations. They offered to come round with a torch, and he was telling everybody it was all right. It had only been a slight bump and a little bit damage done, but nothing to worry about. And we had to pull into Durban to get that attended to. So we pulled in at Durban, and we had a stay over there about two to four days, I think, we would be in there.
How were you received there?
Well, it was great. For most of them, because I was on guard duty the first night, so I wasn't supposed to be in the town. But after, as you know, you do 2 hours on and 4 hours off, and on a ship, the guard commander, he's tucked away somewhere, you're not easy to find. And of course he would know where you were, but you're not easy to find. So when I come my 4 hours off, we took my pal and we nipped along onto the shore for 4 hours, and we went along to the big amphitheatre along in Durban there, and we didn't get a taxi. It was a big South African black fellow with dressed up with all the horns and the feathers and everything, and he had a rickshaw, and we jumped in there and we went right along the Durban seafront to this amphitheatre, and we thought that was great fun. And while he was going, he kept tipping the thing up just to give us a fright. But we were back, we were there and back for the guard, and we were never missed. So we'd broke ranks that particular time. And then when the next, during my next tour of duty as a guard, on comes the OC ships, I think they called them English, come with a great number of officers that had all been ashore. And I was, my job was to stand on the gangplank, and they were coming up and check the passes. So he come up the pass, up the gangplank with these other officers, and I stopped him and I said, "Can I see your pass, sir?" I knew who he was. But if you let him in, it would have been hell to play. So he said, "Well, you know who I am." I said, he said, "I'm Colonel English, OC Troops." I said, "I'll have to see your pass, sir. I'll have to see all these other passes." And he turned around and he said, "Do them all, get the passes out." I'd been ashore myself. I checked them all back in. And it was all right. He was pleased about it, that he'd been checked when he come back on. Would you see what you had to think about, Rod? I knew it was OC Troops, but if I'd let him on, there would have been ructions to play. So, yeah.
Any more memories about Durban?
Yes. The day after that, I got my leave ashore, my shore leave. And there was a chap with us. I don't know whether I've mentioned him before, but he was a Maltese. Born in Malta. And he lived in France a long time, but being born in Malta, he was a British subject, and he was called up with us at Bransworth. And I used to write his letters for him, not because he could speak English, but he couldn't write it. I might have mentioned it. And I went ashore with him, and there were four of us, and the people in South, in Durban, they were grand. As soon as the troop ships come in, they were to come down to the docks and invite all the troops that they were coming out, "Would you come to our place for your dinner," and that kind of thing. But they weren't coming to us, and one woman come across and she said, "You could come to our place for your dinners," she says, "but if you could get rid of him."
Where was that?
He was Maltese, he was dark. Said, "You could come to our place if you could get rid of him." And I said, "This lad's British." I said, "He's a British Maltese." I said, "You can stuff your dinner." He said, "Don't want it." And we didn't go. We just made our own way. But other lads experienced grand times. They were well treated and well looked after. All the place was lit up, which was grand to us. At night time even, the lights were all on, because I don't think they had any air bases where they could get anywhere near South Africa in those days. But through this lad being dark, they didn't want to know. And another thing that struck me was when I went ashore, the prisoners were working on the dockside, and they all had iron balls attached to the feet with the steel or metal anklets on, fastened to the chains. And it was so bad for them that straw pushed it down the where they was taking the flesh away. The steel thing around the feet was taking the flesh away, and that straw turned down. And these chaps were working like that on the dock side, and it didn't impress me at all. Oh, I enjoyed myself while I was in there, but I went and had a haircut. Matter of fact, I went into a black place, and with the only one I saw, I went and needed a haircut, and the only one I saw, and he said, "You're out of bounds." So I said, "Well, cut me hair and I'll get out as quick as I can." So he got me hair cut and went out.
Then from Durban, where did you go then?
Durban, we went then on to up the Red Sea, and it was getting hotter and worse. Come to the entrance, Aden, and
the condition's bad now on the ship.
On the ship. Well, not so bad. You see, the lads were used to it. They were up on the deck, sitting in the little companies and the bingo. There must have been about 20 bingo things going on at the time. And sometimes we had concerts and talks. They had me up to one time, and I'm not the best of speakers. And it's a thing that I'd never done before, but they were stuck. And I just give them a talk on my work as a grocer, and told them a few jokes, and I seemed to go down all right. But anyway, we went further on, and as we come to Waden, it was really clammy, and we just sat on the side of the ship, and we were glad to get the little breeze that was coming along when you moved on the along the waters. And we up the Red Sea, and we went into Port Tewfik, Portshead, then through to Port Tewfik, and Port Shewes that is, but we used to call it Tewfik. And what I remember about that was the smell of oil, never had it before, and it was outstanding. There was oil barrels all over the place. And of course we disembarked at Suez, and in a place called Ismailia, or Ismailia, some people might call it, and that was a big camp for all the troops that were coming off the ships. It was all under canvas, and the weather was warm. And
before we come to that, had you had on the ship any lectures or talks to prepare you for what was going to happened in the Middle East too, or particularly from the point of view of the climate? Was there any preparation at all on the ship?
Well, they must have talked to us about wearing our topies under the sun and that kind of thing, and what we're going into. But no, I don't think there was any, not to my knowledge anyway. There might have been for some of the ordinary infantrymen, but somehow or another, my job was doing jobs. I would miss a lot of things that happened to the ordinary infantryman or platoon man because I would be away doing something else.
So you were given jobs to do during the voyage?
Oh, yes. I used to have to go down into the hold of the ship, and that was a bit of an eerie job. If something was required, and I would have to go down. I knew where my stores were. They'd all been packed down there, and I had to go down on my own. And it's right in the hold of the ship, and it used to be creaking. You were below water then, you know, and the ship used to be creaking, and I used to go hunting around and finding me boxes, whatever I wanted. There was always something got to be brought up. Somebody needed something.
What about disembarkation? Can you remember how you disembarked?
No, not exactly. Just come down the gangway, and the only thing I remember is the tents, a great big marquee where we were all herded into and set up there for until we got ourselves organised, until they find out where they were going to send us to. But it was just a matter of coming down the gangplank, you know, as far as I was concerned. There was nothing in particular about it.
And what was your first impressions of Egypt?
Well, it was grand. The weather, first of all. The sun, the heat, and where we were. It was similar to peacetime soldiering, what you'd heard about. Because you were in the tent, and you would have the Egyptians coming around on early morning, and with the old cry, Char George, you know, and that was a tea, and you used to get a lovely cup of tea, just hand your pot out and get a lovely cup of tea. It was only akkas, pennies to them, and we used to get tet like that, you see. We were, it wasn't a case of getting up and outside for PT like we've been doing in England. It was a case of lying in bed, and the war used to come round and bring the tea round in a big, nice clean pail and fill your pot for you. So it was rather nice because we were right near the Bitter Lakes and we used to do a lot of swimming there, and we would just be finding where and what was going to happen to us. It was a great big tent. There was prisoners of war there, as a matter of fact, in the same area. With no costumes at one time, and we went down, and there was a full platoon of us. And the sergeant major was there, and he said, we're going in for a swim, and there was nobody about, so we just stripped off and left our clothes on the beach. And we went in for a swim in one of these lakes. But when we had to come out, there'd been a caravette or a hut or something on the side. And on the veranda, out comes about five women. And we were all out there in the water, and these women were on the veranda. And we had to get out. So in the end, we just had to make one big dash and cover our modesty and up to our clothes.
What duties and were you doing then when you were in this early, in this first?
Nothing in particular.
Was any training, marching?
No, not at Ismailia. There was no marching.
How long?
There was a posting. I can remember the posting. We were our company when we landed there. And the 3rd Battalion Durham Light Infantry were at on the island of Kos. And there were some of the battalion posted, and my name was on there, and I had a pal of mine was posted as well. But someone took my name off, and I should have been posted to the island of Kos. And I don't know why, but it's probably because somebody made a mistake, and I was company storming, and somebody probably said, well, you cannot, might have been Captain Scott, you cannot send the company storming, you see. So I was taken off that, and they were all taken prisoner on the island of Kos. So I've got a pal now that was prisoner of war for 3.5 years, so I could have been taken a prisoner of war on the island, of course, at the beginning.
Were you in Ismailia long?
Not very long, no.
Where did you go after that?
Ismailia. Oh, Gazala. No? Cyprus. Yeah. We left Ismailia and we went over to Cyprus. They were taking the Greek islands. The Jerry's had taken the Greek islands, so there wasn't a great danger of them taking Cyprus, but there was a danger of taking Kos, and Armis Kos, as I've said. And we went over to Cyprus, but I was rear party, and the battalion had gone over first of all, and I went over on like a kind of a coal ship to Cyprus with the quartermaster and company office staff, you know. We'd been left behind for some reason or other, maybe to hand over stores or something like that.
Was it a quiet journey?
Yes, it was. There was nothing, no danger. I never thought about danger there. And, just going over to Cyprus, there was no danger there. There was some of the Cyprus fellas were going home, Cypriot soldiers. I think they'd been looking after mules or something in France or whatever, and that was their job. And they were delighted when they got to Cyprus. They were down on their hands and knees and kissing the ground, you know. But just before when we landed in Cyprus. We landed at Farm Augusta, and the colour sergeant, we hadn't had a meal on the ship because it was just a coal boat, and we had stores, but tinned peaches and one or two other things, but we just as much as we could carry, but we hadn't had a good meal, and him being a marine, being in the Marines, he's saying a cruiser was lined up in the ship, so he thought he might get some food there, and he went to got permission to go aboard this cruiser, Leander type of cruiser it was, and said that if he could feed some of his men, you know, he had some stores that he could leave for them, like tins of peaches and corned beef and things like that. So they said, well, they've just finished the meal and there's not much, but we'll give them what they is. So we went aboard, and we had a fairly, fairly good meal. And we kept a little of the tin fruit, and we come onto there was a little train you used to run then, like a miniature train it was. It used to run from Farm Augusta and through the orange groves. So we I remember we got on that, and those lads knew we had these, suddenly the lads knew we had these tinder fruit, and they kept shouting out of the train windows, it was only a small train, shouting back along, what about getting that fruit sent along, Johnny? So I had to think of an idea of how we could get fruit to everybody in different carriages. So I thought about the lanyard, and I don't know whether you've seen a lanyard or not, it's a thing goes around your neck, and little loop at one end and one at the other. So I said, get your lanyards out, and we got the tinned fruit and we hooked it into the lanyard, and the we swung the lanyard and the fruit to the next carriage, and they got it, took the fruit out, and come back, and we sent the fruit along to the to their lads that were in different carriages along the front. There weren't many of them, but they were looking for something to eat, and that was one way of getting us to them.
That was on the route from the ship to where we're going.
We landed then in Cyprus. We landed at Farm Augusta in Cyprus, and then we were going to the airport, and that was going to be our job in Cyprus to defend this airport. And it was a place called Lakatamia. And I was in a pillbox then. I was sent into a pillbox for a good week. And we used to do a tour of duty in this pillbox. And there was a plane facing a mountain with a big plateau, like big plateau type of mountain out in the distance. But there was a plane right in front, and this pillbox was positioned just in case paratroops or it landed there from the outskirts. So I did a week there in the pillbox.
So that was a week's duty as an infantryman, really?
Yes, yes, yeah. And while I was there, there was I think there'd only be about six of us in the pillbox. And it was a Bren gun we had. And there was a lad got a message that he's if he was from Shields, and his wife and children had been killed in bombed a cinema in Shields, and the poor lad, he was in a bad way. And I said I would see the chaplain for him, so the corporal was in charge, says, well, take him and let him see the chaplain, see what they can do for him.